Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up, some of the stories we'll be looking at over the next half hour. Iraq's premier vows to free the Chaldean Catholic Archbishop of Mosul, kidnapped in an ambush last Friday. Iraqi Christians flee the violence in their homeland for safety in nearby Syria. And in Vatican news, a delegation of Muslim scholars meets Vatican officials in preliminary talks aimed at furthering the dialogue between Christians and Muslims. And the Vatican Secretary of State travels to troubled Armenia for ecumenical talks and visits with church leaders and the faithful. Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki has assured church leaders that Chaldean Catholic Archbishop of Mosul, Paulus Faraj Raho, kidnapped last Friday in Mosul, would be freed as soon as possible. The Iraqi premier made the assurances in a letter to Chaldean Patriarch Emmanuel Deli. He affirmed that Iraq's interior minister and security forces are investigating the kidnapping with extreme attention. While the driver and two other companions of the archbishop were killed in Friday's attack as they came out of church. The kidnappers have since demanded ransom for the archbishop's release. Chaldean Archbishop Louis Sacco of Kirkuk says Sunni and Shia leaders have condemned the kidnapping and have expressed solidarity with Iraq's small Christian community.
Very critical situation in Mosul, and Christians are living in fear. The Muslims are offended because people are speaking that Muslims have killed three persons accompanying the bishop, and also the bishop has been kidnapped by them. And there are discussions with the kidnappers about the release of the bishop. I am trying with all the groups, the imams and the local authority, because in Mosul there is now only a priest, a young priest. In all the churches, people are praying for his release. That's our hope. And also a lot of fears all over, you know, but it's not easy in such a situation.
The Vatican has been following developments with concern. This past weekend, Pope Benedict made an urgent appeal to the kidnappers to release Archbishop Raho. Bishop Philip Najim is procurator of the Patriarchate of Babylon of the Chaldeans to the Holy See. He spoke to Lydia O'Kane.
The words of the Holy Father, they are very sensitive to the situation. And the Holy Father, he is very respected also from the people of Iraq, from the whole denomination, I will say, really, from the Christian and Muslim people. So his words, it was very important for us, very encouraging for us. He is inviting us to a dialogue. He is inviting us to leave behind us the threatened, to leave behind us the killing, to leave behind us also the bloodshed. Because it's not going to serve the Iraqi community, the Iraqi people. What is going to build the peace in Iraq is the dialogue and to talk with each other and to return to our essential principles of the attitude of the Iraqi people. So we appreciate what the Holy Father said. And we hope the kidnappers, you know, they make up their conscience and to release our beloved bishop as soon as possible, so he can, as the Holy Father said, he can return to his diocese and serve again his people, which he loved always, and he loved his own city, which is Nineveh, Mosul, and he loved the whole denomination which they are living in that city, from Muslim and Christian and Catholic or non-Catholic. He was very well known by all of them, and the whole archdiocese, his archdiocese, and the whole church waiting for his safe return to us so we can carry on and continue our pastoral work everywhere in Iraq and outside Iraq for the Chaldean community.
On the June the 3rd, 2007, in the same area of the same church where this kidnapping took place, we had the killing of Father Ragid Ghani and three subdeacons being shot to death last year. It's a very difficult situation for Christians to be in, and for the community there must be great fear at the present time.
Definitely, as you know, the Christian community in Iraq, their courage and then their process of their own life, it depends a lot of the presence of the church in their life. And the presence of the archbishop, it's very important for each diocese and for each community in Iraq, because it is central for them. Central so they can practice their own faith, they can practice their own life, and it's a central point for them. For every problem, they can go and meet with the bishop, meet with the priest. Yes, we had the killing of Father Vagit in the same place, and created for us a big threat, and created for us a big sadness. And this is what happened again now. They want to threat the Christian people. They want to oblige the Christian people to leave the country and go outside. But we hope that the international community hear our voice, help us and encourage us and give us a strength, you know, so we can continue to give our testimony of our faith at the front of what is happening today in Iraq, which is inhuman.
Indeed, and in the meantime, hope and pray that the bishop who I was reading has been sick and has to take medication. We hope that again that he is safe and well. And
we hope so from the bottom of our heart. We are all of us, all the Chaldean church, in these days and these hours, praying for him, because he is very well known in our church. We are praying for his safety, and we are also praying for the people of the diocese.
I just wanted to know, when we were talking about an archbishop, are these people who are, you know, carrying out these atrocities, are they upping the stakes in a way? They're targeting an archbishop, not priests. Do you think they knew exactly who they were targeting? The fact that they're going after an archbishop and not other, you know, priests, but a person who's in a position of responsibility?
Definitely, as I told you, it's a matter of threatening people and to create a different situation. So that's why they are going to the higher hierarchies, and they are attacking them just to threaten the Christian people and to force them, you know, to leave the country. And that's why we have now a lot of immigration all over the world and all over the Middle Eastern area and our neighborhood. So it's another method. I don't know why they are using it, because we are native of the country. We are Iraqis. Before we became Christian, we are Iraqis, and this is our land, and we are going to stay. We are going to pray. We are going to practice our own faith and our own religion. So that's how we are going to give our testimony of our faith to another people. Our faith is to create peace in Iraq and to create a new country, which is everybody, according to his own right, he can be respected. And through the Vatican Radio, I can call upon the Iraqi government also to recognize his own responsibility at the front of our communities in Iraq, and to protect them and to give them strength, because they are Iraqi, and this is the duty of the local government too.
Bishop Philip Najim is procurator of the Patriarchate of Babylon of the Chaldeans to the Holy See. Well, as the Christian faithful pray for the well-being and speedy release of Archbishop Raho, in the next feature we look at the plight of Iraqi Christians who have fled their homeland to neighboring countries seeking refuge from the violence. Violence in Iraq has forced millions of Iraqis to flee their homes. And each month, Christians are among the 40 to 50,000 Iraqis who try to find refuge in a strange land. Though they account for just 3% of Iraq's entire population, Christians make up a full one-third of all Iraqi refugees. The figures, in fact, are staggering. 2 million Iraqis are now displaced within their own country. Another 2 million are believed to have fled to nearby nations like Syria, Jordan, and Lebanon. Syria alone says some 1.4 million Iraqis have taken refuge in its territory over the last 3 years. Well, I talked with Bishop Antoine Odo, responsible for the Iraqi Chaldean Catholic community in Syria. I wanted to know how Iraqi refugees were coping there. But first, I was curious, how does a Jesuit bishop end up caring for the Chaldean Catholic community?
Because I am originally from a Chaldean family coming from the north of Iraq. And my family, Odo, was very involved in the history of our church. So when the bishop who was before me died in Syria, they need one Chaldean from Syria to take his place. For this reason, they elected me, and I am bishop of the Chaldean in Syria since 15 years now.
I'm sure right now, in the last few years, you've been very, very busy seeing so many refugees coming from Iraq. Now, we know that Iraq had a Christian community of about 800,000 people before the war broke out. Mm-hmm. Most of them were living in Baghdad or in Mosul. Mm-hmm. How many Christians do you think are left in Iraq right now?
I think half of the Christians moved from their homes. A quarter went to the north, in the Kurdistan, and the other quarter are in Syria, in Jordan, and in Lebanon, and in Turkey. So I think a quarter are outside of Iraq, and a quarter went to the north.
We've heard some terrible reports of Iraqi Christians and Muslims being kidnapped, held for ransom, their churches being attacked. What are some of the stories that you've heard from the refugees themselves?
A lot of stories. For instance, the first which I remember, a young priest was kidnapping last September during 11 days in Baghdad with a big difficult situation.
Yes, and we at Vatican Radio were following that story very carefully.
Yes, and he flew to Syria, and now he is with us in Damascus, helping us in the parish of Damascus, because we have between 35 and 40,000 Chaldeans, Iraqi, in Syria, in Damascus.
But he is not the only priest who found himself in serious difficulty there in Iraq. And I'm sure you've heard many stories from many Iraqi Christian families as well.
Yes. My experience is especially the situation of the ladies, the mothers, is pressing their life. They have the responsibility of the children, of the house, and generally we need to assist those ladies in a humanitarian way, psychological way. And really I am in admiration in front of them, this capacity to live, to organize themselves, to continue to be really present in the Syrian society.
Did many of these ladies have to leave their homes without their husbands or their brothers or their fathers?
Sometimes there is a situation of killing, situation of they leave the house to travel outside Iraq, to Europe, to the United States, to see for a job, to prepare the future of the family. Sometimes there is a problem of separation because a big crisis, a big trouble in the families, problem of morality. And so,
most of the refugees, for example, in Syria, which of course you would know best, do not live in camps. But from what I understand, they've been able to rent small apartments, or are staying with friends, or places that have been offered to them by Muslim or other Christian organizations. Mm. Is this situation sustainable? I mean, are people able to work, find jobs? Kids, I understand, are able to go to school. Damascus is helping the Iraqi children to go to school. school.
Syria really did a lot for the Iraqi. They opened the borders, they opened the schools, the hospitals. Really, it's a very humanitarian attitude in this war. But how generally the Iraqis are living? I think the most of them, especially the Christians, they have a lot of support from their family in the United States, Canada, Australia, and Europe. In our family, there is a big solidarity, a spirit, the sense of the family. For instance, if a family in Syria, Iraqi family in Syria, receive $500 a month, for instance, one brother, one son, sent for his family $500, they will pay $250 to rent an apartment, and they will live with the other part. But in the same time, they can work, do some jobs to survive. We have to say we have in Syria Caritas, very well organized. We have different churches. For instance, our parish in Damascus, St. Therese of the Chaldeans, is very active. They will come families. They give help in the field of food, health, education. For instance, we have 1,000 children every week for the catechism. We rent a school in Damascus, and the buses have a special service every week to bring the children to the school, to have every Friday afternoon a time for catechism. And every year we have like 160 boys and girls to prepare for the first communion. We are an active church in the parish. Really, I am in admiration in front of those Christians who are able to continue to organize themselves, to be present and active in the church, in the heart of those difficulties.
We know that Syria has tried to stem the influx of Iraqi refugees by applying tougher visa restrictions. How has that affected the situation?
First, it creates a trouble, a fear, you know, because those families are in a situation without any law which protect them. They are accepted, they are tolerated, but they don't know for how many time. But generally, Syria, they accept them waiting a solution. So first, a psychological problem of fear to be put out. But I think Syria will not do this unless if there is a crime or trouble. This is the first point. Syria asked a visa in the beginning of October for two reasons. The first is that Syria, with 1,200,000 Iraqis, need a security and order in Syria. It doesn't want any trouble. So it limited this danger of violence in Syria. The second one, the Syria wants to do some pressure on the United States and the United Nations to ask Syria's help to pay for those refugees who are accepted in the schools, in the hospital. But in the same time, I was told that a lot of Iraqis continue to come to Syria, but they have now to pay something to get a visa on the border.
So what would you say then are the most urgent challenges that need to be addressed to improve the situation of the Iraqi refugees, and particularly the Christian refugees?
I think we have to continue our program. We don't have to stop. We have to continue with more organization. We need more professionalism in the helping the Iraqis. It's not enough to give some help from time to time. We need something well organized. And I think now Caritas has a good experience to improve their programs. This is what we need, some experienced personalities with experience with doing a serious job, especially in Damascus, in Aleppo, and in Hasakeh, in Jazire.
Okay, and you think that the Syrian government has been assisting Christian aid organizations such as Caritas?
I think so. The government knows very well the situation, and especially Caritas is helping not only the Christians, but Caritas is really the organism of the church for everybody. And this is a very nice testimony. For instance, in Aleppo, we have a branch of Caritas with 1,000 families to have help from Caritas. And between those 1,000 families, 200 families are Muslim. It is really a good testimony, a good experience in the Christian society in Aleppo, when they see that Muslim Iraqis are coming to the church with the other Christians from Iraq to be together. It gives a good testimony for everybody, for Muslim and for Christians.
Bishop Antoine Odo is responsible for the Iraqi Chaldean Catholic community in Syria. A delegation of Muslim scholars is here in Rome for 2 days of meetings with Vatican officials to discuss furthering interfaith dialogue between moderate Islam and the Catholic Church. The five scholars include representatives from Islamic communities in Europe and the Middle East. Well, the small Muslim delegation is meeting with members of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue. Council President Cardinal Jean-Louis Touron spoke to us upon his return last week from a 2-day conference at Cairo's prestigious Al-Azhar University. Undoubtedly, the meetings here in the Vatican are likely to touch on similar subjects as those discussed in Egypt.
The atmosphere was very cordial, and it has been an occasion to discover that we share many convictions, many common convictions. The theme was the love of God and the love of a neighbor. And we discovered that we share the same view, that is to say that when you believe in God, you are forced to be good to your neighbor. As our Muslim friends underline very often that according to the Quran, in matter of religion, there is no constriction, so I took the opportunity to raise the issue of countries where the freedom of religion and freedom of cult is not possible, and they recognize that there is a problem. Finally, we also condemn in our joint communique the attacks against religion by some mass media who do not respect religion and their symbols.
Cardinal Touron speaking there about the 10th annual meeting of the Joint Committee of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue and Cairo's Al-Azhar University. Well, Imam Yahya Pallavicini, representing Italy's Muslims, described this week's preliminary talks in the Vatican as technical. He told the Italian press the meeting's aim at setting a date, a place, and who will be the participants of an upcoming summit between Islamic dignitaries and Pope Benedict himself. The talks represent a new phase in Christian-Muslim dialogue, furthered by an open letter last October to Pope Benedict and other Christian leaders, signed by 138 Muslim scholars. In the letter, the Muslims express their desire to forge a new relationship based on peace, mutual understanding, and collaboration between Christians and Muslims. In comments to the press, Imam Pallavicini said, Muslim signatories of the letter, now more than 200, propose creating a body of reference similar to what the Vatican represents for the world's Catholics, a Muslim coordination team representing moderate Eastern and Western Islam, with which the Holy See and other Christian churches can dialogue in a credible and meaningful way. Signatories of the letter, entitled The Common Word, include Muslim leaders of 43 countries, including the Sunni Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and Shiite Iran.
You're listening to Vatican Radio.
And in other news from the Vatican, Pope Benedict has sent the Holy See Secretary of State, Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone, to Armenia for ecumenical encounters and visits with leaders and the faithful of the Church in full communion with Rome. Chris Altieri reports.
The Cardinal Secretary's visit comes at a politically tense moment in the country after election disputes at the weekend erupted into violence and the military was called in to restore order. The Apostolic Nuncio to Armenia, Azerbaijan, and Georgia, Archbishop Claudio Gujarati, spoke with us about the ongoing tension and the importance of the Cardinal Secretary's visit.
It is strongly desired to be here also in this moment, which is dangerous, of course, for everybody, including the Cardinal, just to witness the love and the affection of the Catholic Church and of the Holy See and of the Holy Father, of course, for Armenia, this first Christian country in the world, and to express also an invitation to dialogue, to mutual comprehension, peace, and respect of human rights, which he is doing together with the head of the Armenian Apostolic Church, His Holiness Karakian II, with whom we will have a long meeting. Then he is going to visit the Catholic community, and then His Eminence will have meetings with the highest civil authorities in Armenia.
Christian communities were present in Armenia in the first decade of the Church's life, and in the year 301, Armenia became the first country in the world to adopt Christianity as its official religion. The Church and the people of Armenia have survived centuries of repression and periodic persecution in which hundreds of thousands of Armenians perished. After years of foreign domination, first under the Ottoman Turks and later under the Soviet Union, Armenia became the first non-Baltic state to secede from the expiring Imperial Communist Federation. I'm Chris Holtieri.
Well, that brings today's program to a close. I'm Tracy McClure, thanking you for joining me for the last half hour. Tune in again tomorrow at the same time and on this same channel for the next English feature program, or you can hear us at any time of the day or night by clicking on our website. That's vaticanradio.org. Just look for the English service. We'd also love to hear your comments or suggestions, so send us an email. We appreciate snail mail, too. Just send us a note to the English Service at Vatican Radio, Piazza Pia 3, Vatican City, 00120. Again, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.